2:30 to 4 Monday to Friday. It is the Blitz here on AM 1450 KATE. Mitch Widmeyer here with you. Going to the phone lines, our guest today, as he's kind enough to join us every week, Ryan Burns, covers the Gophers for Gopher Illustrated. You can find much of his work through that outlet at gopherillustrated.com. Ryan, as always, we appreciate you taking the time. Not the prettiest of wins for the Gophers a week ago, but you take them however you get them. PJ Fleck mentioned that, you know, you always celebrate, you always enjoy a win. Did you expect them to have to rely on the defense as much as they did against Buffalo?
No, the things I thought coming into that game was that the offense was going to have to carry the defense because Minnesota was breaking in so many brand-new players in their secondary, and that the offense going against what was a terrible defense in 2016 for Buffalo doesn't look to be that way, at least in their first game of the season of 2017. So Minnesota, in the opening quarter, is able to lead two touchdown drives, one by each quarterback. They go up 14-7, and then that's where it remains all the way until 2 minutes left in the game. Emmett Carper doesn't have the greatest of games, leaving points on the board. Connor Rota throws a catastrophic interception. Minnesota only wins 17-7. But the big thing to note there is that Minnesota's defense, without Jay Saville, their former defensive mastermind, game one for Rob Smith looked pretty good. Now, Minnesota's got to figure out things on the offensive side of the ball, especially heading into Oregon State on Saturday. But a win is a win, and again, I think Coach Fleck put it afterwards. Once they got into the third quarter, they knew they weren't going to lose the game, so they probably did everything in their power to play as vanilla as possible.
I don't know if I'm just naive, but it was 14-7, like you mentioned, for most of the game. Yet, I never felt like the Gophers were in danger of losing that game, and they've had a couple of those. I don't know if last year was like Indiana State, Colorado State a year or two ago. They've had a couple of those non-conference games where it's close, but they never feel, at least in my estimation, in danger of losing the game. Did you have that sense against Buffalo last week, even though it was a one-possession game throughout?
I'm with you. I never really thought Minnesota was going to lose the game. The defense was playing too well. They were stopping the run extremely well. 22 carries for 51 yards for Buffalo, and even in the second half, 6 carries for 3 yards. So not a lot going for that Buffalo offense, especially once Minnesota was able to get them into passing situations and their defense was able to come up big. I was just a little disappointed in terms of, again, this is a Buffalo team that was 2-10 last year. They look to be much improved. And by much improved, they're probably going to be battling for a bowl game. I don't think they're going to go from 2-10 to 10-2, but their defensive line played extremely well against a Minnesota front five that, I think PJ Fleck talked about it in his post-game press conference, that they played as 5 different individuals and not as one cohesive unit. And I don't think I could put that any better into words, because that unit never really had anything going all day. They could never really get any push up front. And so when you look at some of the past kind of close games against the MAC, Ohio last year comes to mind, where Minnesota just squeaks out a victory. But again, by squeaking out, they won by 7-10, but again, you never felt like they were going to lose the game because the defense was playing so well. So it seems to be a common theme year after year after year. Now, one of the biggest things that PJ Fleck has on his plate and why he came to Minnesota is he has to fix this offense, which is obviously only 17 points in the opener against a MAC opponent, needs to change, but he's going to have an opportunity to do that against a really bad defense in Oregon State this weekend.
Ryan Burns of Gopher Illustrated, our guest this afternoon here on the Blitz. Not many changes on the depth chart for this week. You mentioned the game against Oregon State. Are we expecting the same layout for the quarterbacks, some Rota and some Demery Croft? Because, I mean, I didn't think either leapfrogged the other against Buffalo. There was some good, some things clearly to work on, but I didn't think either grasped a hold onto the gig.
Exactly. I think that while Demery Croft showed that he can get things working in the running game better, I think that Connor kind of took the offense to a different level in the passing game. So again, what I think is the lifeblood of this offense is the running game. And with Demery Croft at quarterback, Minnesota averaged 1.5 yards more per carry. And I don't think that's any kind of coincidence, considering that Demery Croft took it 6 times on read option and Connor Rota never took the ball once. And so if you're going to run a run-pass option offense, which Minnesota is under Kirk Ciarrocca, if your quarterback's not willing to do the first part of the name of the offense, it's not probably going to be as efficient as it's going to be with the other quarterback. So I thought that just things were pretty split, even 50-50 in terms of their performance and in the number of reps. Connor Rota got 7 series, Demery Croft got 6. So I think that's going to be the game plan again going into Oregon State, because PJ Fleck and Kirk Ciarrocca really want somebody to take hold and a firm grasp of this quarterback position. But after game one, I thought both quarterbacks did some good things I thought both quarterbacks did some not so good things. So until one of them continues to play well and the other one doesn't play up to that level, you're going to see pretty much a 50-50 split.
I think I asked you a variation of this question a week ago, but like, where's the cutoff if this keeps going on where both guys are doing all right at the quarterback spot but neither emerges as the dude? Is there a cutoff point where Fleck just has to pick one anyways?
I would like to see one by Maryland, especially because that gives whatever the quarterback decision is an extra week to prepare for it. So Minnesota's got Oregon State this weekend, and they come home to play against Middle Tennessee State. Now, I think that the coaching staff would really like if one of them would take a hold of the job by them, because that following weekend is a bye week. So then they can really put in a game plan, prepare for just one quarterback. But the more that time goes on and the more that neither quarterback continues to separate themselves, I think the longer you're going to see the two-quarterback system. Again, I'm not necessarily in favor of it, but when you don't really have a quarterback that's experienced, number one, and number two, they don't really show anything that says, well, you should really be the guy and we should be devoting 100% of the reps to you, it's tough to really make a decision from there. So, again, I think the coaching staff hopes by the end of the Middle Tennessee State game they have a firm idea of who's going to be their quarterback for Big Ten play. But if nobody's really asserted themselves, looks like Minnesota will head into Maryland with still two quarterbacks.
One layer that I loved with the two quarterbacks is obviously they have like 1 and 1A at running back with Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks, and it seemed for most of the game, if not all the game, when Rhoda was out there, we saw Rodney Smith at running back. When Demaryius Croft was out there, we saw Shannon Brooks. I know some made note that we didn't see the big breakout runs from either Rodney or Shannon. I don't know what you thought, Ryan, but Rodney goes for 76, Shannon for 69, and I'm telling you, if you put two average Joes back there last week at running back, they aren't sniffing that kind of yardage. I actually thought the two-headed monster masked some of the inexperience of the big boys up front.
Absolutely they did, and that's an astute observation from you. And again, you look at the longest runs for both. I believe Rodney Smith had his long of 10 yards, and Shannon Brooks' long was with 17. I don't think it's a coincidence that either's long was with Demaryius Croft, because again, when you have a running quarterback back there, it's able to open up so many different things in the read option, where in the second half, all the edge defenders were doing for Buffalo was crashing down on the running back because they knew that Connor Rhoda didn't want to keep it. So I don't really understand why Connor didn't keep a single ball, because throughout fall camp at the practices I was at, he had success doing it. He had a couple of 20-plus yard running touchdowns because he kept on read option. And then he gets to the first game, and he gets stage fright, and he doesn't keep. And that really hindered the offense in the second half. And when you look at both of the running backs' performances, I didn't think they really left much meat on the bone out there. They got what they were able to get, and some of that is because of the quarterback play, and some of that is also because of the offensive line. Again, Minnesota's interior of their offensive line, frankly, got beat up. They got pushed back on too many plays. They stood straight up too many times, and they allowed the Buffalo defensive tackles to either stalemate or get penetration into the backfield. So it was looking like 2016 all over again for Rodney Smith. This is an offensive line that has to play more aggressive. They have to continue to work on lowering their pad level, because it's not going to get any easier from here on out.
I don't know if I've ever addressed this or asked. Are you a former lineman? I mean, that just sounded like a former lineman talking.
I was. So, you know, we kind of pick up a trade or two as we go through the years here, Mitch.
A lot of that stuff, it didn't go quite over my head, but I was like, this just sounds like a former lineman talking. Looking at other skill spots on the offense, Tyler Johnson had the monster first half, including the 61-yard TD from Connor Rhoda. Will he continue to be the go-to guy in the passing game, or could it level out?
No, it's going to be Tyler Johnson. It's going to be early. It's going to be often. And frankly, Tyler Johnson ate Buffalo for breakfast, for lunch, and for dinner in that first half. It was extremely fun to watch. That's the best wide receiver performance and the most dominant wide receiver performance I've seen in a half since Eric Decker. And six catches for 141 yards and a touchdown. He was constantly open. And I mean, everything we had talked about on that preview week last week about Tyler Johnson, the way he's able to immediately create separation off the line because of how explosive he is, and then he's also able to create so much separation because of how explosive he is out of his cut. And you saw that Connor Rhoda specifically kept going to him time and time and time again, and he was able to produce. Now, I even think that Tyler Johnson left even more yardage on the table with a couple of fade balls that I thought he should have reeled in from Demaryius Croft. And if he gets those, I mean, we're talking 8 catches for 200 yards and a touchdown and like national player of the week kind of recognition. I think the sky is absolutely the limit. I think in a P.J. Fleck, Kirk Soraka offense, he should catch 75 balls this week. Or not, I don't know necessarily this week, but this year. So when you look at Oregon State, again, this isn't a very good defensive team. So I would expect another 100-yard performance from Tyler Johnson again this Saturday.
Always enjoy his time with us. Ryan Burns of Gopher Illustrated, our guest. Find his work at gopherillustrated.com. Looking on the other side of the ball, I know it's just one game. I know it was against Buffalo, but Antoine Winfield Jr. is certainly special. Could a first-team all-conference nod be in the realm of possibilities for him this year?
If he continues to play as well as he did on Thursday, and more importantly, as versatile as he was, I think that's the bigger key there. You saw him do a little bit of everything for the Gopher defense and even the Gopher special team. He's second on the team in tackles. He has a sack. He has a tackle for loss. Two passes batted down, including one of the greatest recoveries I've seen from a secondary player in a Minnesota uniform on the, I believe it was a double reverse or flea flicker of some sort. I'm watching that play from the press box, and I can see that the receiver in question is running wide open right behind Antoine Winfield. And by the time Winfield realizes it, the Buffalo receiver has a full running head start, and Winfield has to make up at least 12 to 15 yards. Number one, he closes that gap, gets his right arm in there, breaks it up without giving up the touchdown, without getting a PI. And I know some folks were like, well, the Buffalo quarterback underthrew it. No, he didn't, folks. If you watch the amount of time that ball was in the air, the Buffalo quarterback threw it 60 yards in the air. I mean, that was a cannon. The receiver just got too deep too quick. So Antoine Winfield's able to benefit from the wide receiver kind of going out the gates a little bit too fast. I mean, he's also able to block a kick. I mean, he was everywhere for Minnesota, and he is so versatile. Again, he plays nickel, he plays safety, he's on special teams. He does a little bit of everything for this Gopher defense, and if he continues to play as well as he did, I think he's going to top that freshman All-American season from 2016.
Saturday night in Corvallis against Oregon State out on the West Coast. How about the Beavers sitting as two-point favorites? I saw them open up as one-point favorites, Ryan Burns. They got hammered by Colorado State, escaped against FCS Portland State. Not a lot of love right now for the Gophers.
I don't understand this line at all, and I'm a betting man. As you said, this game open, I believe, is a pick 'em, 52 over-under, and it's now still sitting at a -2 favorite for Oregon State. So, I mean, if you technically look at it, Minnesota's favored by a point because the home team gets three, but this is an Oregon State team that got obliterated to start the season on the road against Colorado State, a team which Minnesota beat last year. And then they had to win in late in the fourth quarter at home against an FCS opponent in Portland State, who's not even, I believe, ranked in the top 25 for the FCS teams. Now, where if Minnesota's going to blow this game open and win by as much as at least 10 points, the offense and the offensive line, more specifically, is going to have a much different result. The offensive line is going to have to come out pissed off. They're going to have to come out with a lot lower pad level and come out with something to prove, because this is an offensive or a defensive unit that is one of the worst tackling units I've seen in quite some time. Now, I thought Gary Anderson in year three was going to be a whole of a lot better. Maybe they changed the script in game three, because, again, I'm sure that this Oregon State coaching staff is really getting after their players after the performances in the first 2 weeks. But Minnesota's offense has an opportunity to put up a lot of points. Now, the thing is, are they going to be able to convert, or are they going to leave 10-plus points on the field like they did last Thursday night?
If this game was in Minnesota, I'm just curious your thoughts on this. If this game was in Minnesota, what do you think the line would be? If it's at TCF, I don't think it's just flipped around. I would guess the Gophers would be like 4.5, 5, maybe 5.5-point favorites.
Oh, I was going to go 6. Again, I think that home field does play an advantage. And again, another thing of the storylines that's being talked about here in the Gopher media is the different air quality things that's going on out in Oregon. You're seeing all the different wildfires consuming the atmosphere out there, making it, I believe I saw a report this morning that breathing conditions are hazardous out there. Now, it's expected to shift before kickoff, so there's going to be better air in there. But who knows? Maybe this game even gets relocated or changed to a different time. That's going to be one of the storylines we have to watch here in the final 48, 60 hours here up until kickoff. Because, again, remember, folks, this is a 9 p.m. Central kickoff on Saturday night. It's on Fox Sports 1. So I know I wasn't really planning on a 9 p.m. kickoff on a Saturday night, considering this is game's probably going to get over around 12:30, 1 o'clock Eastern or Central anyway. So a lot of different storylines to watch going into this game.
Keys against Oregon State for Minnesota would be what?
Again, that offense has to be able to assert itself. If they're not going to be able to assert themselves this week, I have very I have a lot of hesitation about this offense going forward because, once again, this Oregon State defense is giving up points and they're giving up yardage by the bundles. Again, this is a team that got put up 52 points on them in the opener by Colorado State. Portland State's able to put up 32 on the road against them. This is just not a very good defensive unit. So the offensive line and the offense is really going to have to come to play. The defense is going to have to play as well as they did last week. Number one, they're going to have to be able to stop the run again, because if they're able to, Oregon State really likes to get in those deep drops, those 5-7, 9-step drops, and if they're going to be doing that, Minnesota's pass rushers are going to have to get home. So you look at Blake Cashman, Carter Coughlin, Kamal Martin, an assortment of different players from Minnesota are going to have to be able to force some pressure, because, again, Minnesota also left some turnovers out in the field. And then finally, again, I'm very curious to see how a Minnesota team adjusts to a 9 p.m. Central kind of kickoff, because, again, this isn't typically what any of these kids are used to. You know, by 9 p.m., they're going to be going to bed in a few hours, even if they are college kids. So, again, it's just a lot of different timing things, a lot of different things for Minnesota to be able to get ready for, and I hope that they're going to be able to put it together this Saturday night.
Ryan Burns with us of Gopher Illustrated. Find his work through that outlet. We'll finish up with some college football-wide notes outside of Minnesota. Let's start with the Big Ten, I guess. Did Maryland, within the conference, did Maryland have the most impressive win in the Big Ten last week? I thought Purdue may have had the most impressive performance, coming up a touchdown short against Louisville, but if I frame it as most impressive win, was it Maryland at Texas, even though we don't really have a feel as to how good or bad Texas will be?
Yeah, I didn't really understand why Texas was ranked outside of name recognition there, but even still, Maryland's able to go down and put up 51 points in Texas at Texas. Again, this is a Maryland team that I wasn't expecting a lot from. Many national media members weren't expecting a lot from. Now, the tough thing is for Maryland, they lost their starting quarterback for the year to an ACL tear. So how does this team kind of gather itself as they head into the next week? But again, Maryland going down to Texas is pretty impressive. And as you noted, I think that Purdue in game one, I wasn't expecting them to put up as much of a fight against Louisville as they did. Kept that game very close all the way to the fourth quarter. That offense for Purdue is going to be something that is a niche in the Big Ten. You just don't see a whole lot of places like it. And that's why the new Western Kentucky coach there, who's now at Purdue, was hired there. Because if you're going to win at Purdue, you have to be a little bit gimmicky, because you're never going to finish in the top 30, 40 in recruiting rankings, because it's Purdue. And people just don't really want to go to the middle of nowhere, Indiana there, and play at Purdue. So both Maryland and Purdue were pretty impressive. And then you look at some of the other places. You know, Nebraska just sneaking past an Arkansas State team. That's worth noting. Illinois needing to get a late field goal, I believe, blocked to get past Ball State. Illinois looks like who we thought they were going to be. And then Michigan, I thought, should have won by even more against Florida. They looked like clearly the dominant team. I believe Florida just had two pick sixes against the Wolverines. So Michigan looks as good as advertised, but there's a lot of different things in the Big Ten that's yet to be settled.
All right, I'm going to put you on the spot. We're going to wrap things up with some picks. You were 3-0 last week. We're not going with spreads. This is more for those interested in Moneyline. You were 3-0 last week. You took the Gophers, you took Alabama, and you took Michigan in games that I tossed your direction. Three more this weekend for you, Ryan. Just give us the pick with a quick reason as to why that team will win. Let's start with Oklahoma at Ohio State. Who do you got?
I don't know what the line is in this game, but I was looking at just specifically what to expect in this game. And I don't see a way that Ohio State really loses this game. Again, it's at Ohio Stadium. It's in Columbus. I think that Urban's going to have this team ready to go. And I don't frankly think that the Big 12 had a very good showing last week. Frankly, they didn't. For the most part, the Big 12 looked really bad. So when you look at the best team, arguably, in the Big 12 going against the best Big 10 team, arguably, I think that Ohio State wins by 10.
Stanford at USC in a clash of two of the top teams in the Pac-12.
Now, another interesting note here is when you look at USC, they had PJ Flex Western Michigan team at the Coliseum last week. And this is a Western Michigan team full of PJ Flex recruits. You look at what they did to USC in terms, they kept it extremely close through three quarters. They kept it all the way to the fourth quarter, and they made it extremely close. So if you don't think recruiting rankings matter, it's not a coincidence that PJ Fleck had the top-rated recruiting class for 4 years, then they go to USC and they give USC all they can handle. I just think that Stanford's offensive line and just even their tight ends are some of the most – this is from what I've seen on tape, is just absolutely dominant. So I'm going to give Stanford the edge here.
It's the last one for you, Georgia at Notre Dame.
Oh, see, here's the thing with that game is Georgia's going to be starting a brand new quarterback. He's a true freshman. I believe he's a five-star kind of kid. So how does he react to going to Notre Dame? Because I think Notre Dame's better than obviously they were last year. I believe this game is at Notre Dame, is it not?
Yeah, it's at Notre Dame, and actually, again, we're just going with the straight-up pick, not going by spreads, but Notre Dame, I'm assuming because Eason is out at quarterback for Georgia, the Fighting Irish, as of last night, were 5.5-point favorites.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Notre Dame here because, again, asking a true freshman, as talented as he may be, to start on the road in a national place like Notre Dame, I hope that that Georgia offensive line can be able to protect him, because if they can't early on, I think it's been pretty shaky. So I'll go Notre Dame.
Find his work at gopherillustrated.com. He is Ryan Burns. And Ryan, as always, we appreciate the time.
Appreciate it, sir. Talk to you next week.
We'll wrap things up next right here on The Blitz.